For everyone on here who is unfamiliar with Matt, Matt started getting notoriety from being on Shark Tank. That's where he kind of got the second wave of people knowing who he was. But before that, he obviously was a successful entrepreneur and somebody who is partnered with the owner of the Miami Dolphins, Stephen Ross, and they partnered with a company called RS E Ventures, and he's lots of accolades along the way. And one of the most recent things that Matt has done is he's become an author, and not just an author, but a Wall Street Journal bestselling author. And that's actually how Matt and I got connected. And so, Matt, thank you first off for writing this book, right? So you have right there, I have it right back there, and right back here, and
Thank you.
we're actually going to give away 30 of these books today to people on here, as a way to
Awesome. Thank
show,
you.
yeah, there's a way to show respect for you, and also to give people value. Like, that's always the number one thing, is like, how do we give people value? And this book is very valuable. So, but anyway, so just want to say thanks for being on here. And then secondly, I want to introduce you to my co-host Sam Singh, who I just really grateful for him. And he's somebody who helps me when I start talking too much. He comes in and like says the more articulate funny things that gets me off the hook for just blabbering. So that's why I bring him on here. And very like very so much who very someone very much somebody who like gives value through his presence and his question asking. And anyway, Sam, please take the stage because I am now talking too much.
I love it. It's funny when you go on your rambles. It's the best thing ever. Matt, for someone that's doing all that you're doing right now, right? Time and attention are two, in my opinion, the two most important resources that you could have. And for you to be able to spend those with us today, it means the absolute world. Before we go any further, I have to say this. I absolutely have to say this. And it's about burn the boats. When I did something very, very scary, which was leaving my W-2 and becoming like going full send to being an entrepreneur, I had to remind myself to do what you basically preach, and that is to burn the boats and what that means. And so much so to the point where when like where's the reminder of burning the boats when you're doing something scary? It's your bank account, right? You're leaving the financial safety net of the W-2. So much so I actually went to Wells Fargo and I changed my online password. So every time I looked at my bank account and how horrible it was, my password was actually burn the boats. So
That's amazing. Love that.
Thank you. And it's so kind of crazy cool because today is actually, Logan, you didn't know this. Today is actually my 2 year anniversary in entrepreneurship.
Nice.
And it's basically a 2 year anniversary of me learning to burn the boats. To be able to sit here with you, I don't know if it's manifestation, I don't know if it's God, if it's destiny, whatever it is. Well, I mean, I know what it is. Partially it's Logan. But I wanna express some tremendous gratitude for you being here today.
Well, thank you. By the way, it's so funny. Well, we can begin at the end and go back to the beginning and just jump in. But it's great to be with the people just working hard to manifest their own autonomy. And for those who haven't read the book, I can go a little bit into my origin story, but I just want to start by this. Let me show you who my accountability partner is, because I always said that I wrote my book to be my accountability partner. Just because you believe that you have the answers to certain things about life because you live long enough, you've been through shit, like it doesn't mean because you have the answers, you know how to implement them. And I always say my book is my accountability partner. And my goal is to commiserate, not lecture, right? And I think we don't do enough where we talk about the issues that we struggle with, even when you are quote unquote unsuccessful or you have more in that bank account. Maybe you could change your password ultimately from burn the boats to like shit, I burned the boats, I crushed it, like whatever. Like even still, it's still really hard. So in my book, I try to tell a story. So I need my own accountability partner. So I just got a tattoo. Let me show it to you.
Oh, nice.
So that says burn the boats in Chinese because the phrase, I love this tattoo, by the way. I love it. It's my first tattoo. I was like, what's the most important thing I could get on my body that I'm gonna remind myself every day? And the reason why I chose that is because we attribute the phrase to Cortez in 1519. And he just had a better marketing campaign because in reality, before Cortez, there was a gentleman named Tariq Ziyad. For anyone out there who's Muslim will understand that those words. In 711, he conquered Spain. That's why you have Moorish in Spain. But before him, there was a battle in China in 206 BC, an epic battle. And the words, Pofu Chenzhou, anybody from China will know those words. And it means burn the boats, actually sink the boats. So it's a long way of saying your point of changing your password. I think we all need to change our password. We all need to be reminded all the time that the single most important thing that you need to work on is being staying true to your commitment. And every single day I fight a battle to with that constantly, even though I wrote that book. And so it's just, I just want to start there saying one of the things that frustrates me about society, Instagram, we're all being preached how to do it. Everyone's just, you know, a guru now, but there isn't enough honesty, like that's not reality. Humans are two steps back, forward, one step back, if we're lucky. Some days it's three steps back, right? So I progress and I regress, and such is the human condition. Part of why I wrote the book is to appropriate this very militaristic phrase, jingoistic, that tends to sometimes be used by, you know, people who are like, burn the boats and F everyone else. I wanted to write a book that was actually for the rest of us, maybe, who are not Kevin O'Leary and perfectly self-possessed and don't care what anyone thinks, who have anxiety, who have imposter syndrome. I talk openly about those things in my book because I want to make it clear that most success happens in spite of, not because of. I am here in spite of growing up on government cheese and carrying shame, having anxiety, having weight problems, having cancer, having one testicle, getting divorced. I'm here in spite of it. And I bet you a lot of people on this call are here in spite of, but people who don't have a role model think it's because of. And when you think you don't have what they have, it subconsciously sends a message to you that you're not good enough. And so I'm with this book, and I'll stop there. I'm trying to share some of the more ugly parts to realize that you are good enough. And I'm appropriating this phrase that goes back to the beginning of recorded history for the rest of us, for whom who have to work on burning the boats every single day, including changing your password on your bank account.
That's so good. It's so good. And I think it's important that, so I introduced you, Matt, to the audience. I introduced Sam to you. And I think it's also important to introduce the audience to you as well. So you also have an idea of who you're talking to as well. And I think it's actually really cool that, you know, you share in your book the story of your mom paying rent, having to, you know, how she paid rent was by cleaning homes, right? And a big portion of the people on here are in the cleaning industry. Like they're people who started as cleaning homes, and they decided maybe I should turn this into a business. And now many of them have aspirations to turn it into a $1 million business. Now they have belief because they see that it's possible, and they're like, I can do this too. And when they do that, they're able to serve more people. We also have a big audience of real estate investors, people who are buying and holding real estate, people who are flipping real estate, people who are wholesaling real estate. And, you know, with the uncertainty of markets and interest rates, like I think, like outside of like this call, like there's gonna be so much value in this call, like people need to follow you because you're somebody who talks about your experiences, what you've seen, some things that you believe are going to happen. And I think it is not common for people in who have as much credibility as you do to be openly talking about those things and actually like interacting with people about questions and answers, and whether it's on Threads, which you're actively on, or on Instagram. Like you actually engage with the people. And that's one of the reasons that me and Sam are so attracted to you on that. And then the fact that you just like show that how committed you are to your message, that you got a tattoo, your first tattoo. How old are you, Matt? How old are you?
40.
How old?
48.
48. At 48, you got a tattoo of the title of your book on your arm. Like if that doesn't show commitment, tell me what does.
Oh, by the way, and the reason what I was committed to showing you was how hard it is to remain committed, even the guy who wrote the book, because I want anybody out there who wakes up one day and be like, I suck, man. I can't commit to this idea that I really care about. And that becomes a feedback loop in your mind. You start to doubt and you undermine yourself. I wanted to show to you, even me, I needed that thing tattooed on my arm to remind myself. And so that is really the point. Not that I am the embodiment of the idea, that I'm the embodiment of the idea about how hard it is to work on it and how must we remain committed, just like you changed your password. But I would love to, break down the audience a little bit more for me. So it's independent owners, a lot of people in cleaning, real estate, any other areas?
Yeah. I mean, there's going to be people in other areas, but that's, you know, that's the focus of this group. Of my community is cleaning business owners. And then Sam brings in the real estate investors, and we're able to kind of combine those two things to create a synergist of a small business owner. Right.
So for those who don't know, should I give a little bit of context really quick? I'll do it tight, a few minutes of context of me, the story, and I don't know how much you gave the audience, but I can do the shorter version.
Okay. Please.
So let me just share the parts that resonate most with me and the salient points for the audience. But I I grew up in Queens, New York. Anyone out there from New York? I grew up in a place called Bayside. I was a product of a single mom, which shaped a lot of my identity. And we was four boys, rotten, miserable boys. And my mother was really brilliant, incredible brain, but the product of a lot of horrendous abuse, which didn't become clear to me until much later in life, but framed everything to the point that she didn't even have a high school diploma. So you had this woman with a fierce mind, with a deadbeat dad. And when I was 9 years old, she tried to reclaim her life and get an education. She got her GED at Queensborough Community College and enrolled. And I remember my father being so angry, threw the typewriter at her head. And I woke up the next morning and she was actually had a Sharpie and she was putting his initials on underwear. And I'm like, what are you doing? And they're like, well, dad'll be leaving today, but he's never done laundry before. So I just want to make sure he can find his underwear. I shared that story for the first time yesterday. I was like, I should paint a picture of that a little bit more for anybody out there who's dealing with a lot of crap can know what I'm talking about. So that was the context. And so my earliest formative years are a little bit of the hero child, you know, whose job it is to try to save his family. I was selling flowers on street corners when I was 10 years old. No bullshit. I used to scrape gum under tables at McDonald's. And I used to sell handbags at flea markets for $10. So it's like this constant hustle. And back then, you did everything you could to hide the fact that you were poor. Ironically, now kids hide the fact that they're wealthy, which is always trippy to me. But sure. Anyway, like, I was like, you really? Like, you got to, now we got to be worried about that dad has a nice watch. Before, I couldn't even afford a watch. But regardless, and I grew up on what you call government cheese, blocks of government cheese from the USDA that literally said courtesy of the United States government. So that was my framing, my context. And then was born with probably the most important gift of my life, which was a defiance that I didn't feel like just because I was deposited here as a zygote, that I was going to end here in the ground, you know, and that I had a bigger destiny in store for me. And so I was like constantly figuring out, like, how do I get out of this situation? And when you're a little kid, first you fantasize about the hero, usually a man when you have a single mom, like, oh, there's a guy going to come in, going to rescue mom, my family. And he never comes. And then you think society will come rescue you. Like, my mother's clearly sick. Why are we constantly in an ER? Like, can't somebody do something? And then that doesn't happen. And then your teachers and, you know, they don't even really know what you're going through. Then they don't come. And then you eventually conclude the cavalry is not coming. And this is where I think people's life goes in a sliding doors moment. When you conclude that the cavalry is not going to come, are you going to be bitter about that and resign and assume that the die is cast? Or are you going to take matters into your own hands? And I had a very important break when I was young, and I decided from now on, I'm not going to embrace the victim narrative. My mother was very heavy and depressed and, like, you know, naturally, right? Life beats you down. I would have these conversations with her. So, you know what, from now on, things don't happen to me. I happen to things. And that was my break from the victim narrative. And I decided I got to do everything humanly possible to accelerate my path to college, because I would read these ads in a local free newspaper called The Penny Saver. And it would say college students only, you know, $7 an hour, $8 an hour. I was making $3.75 at McDonald's. And I was like, I got to become a college student. I could 2X my income. What the hell does it take to become a college student? And then I had an epiphany. I was like, you know, my mother went and got a college education with a GED, but technically, if I were to drop out 2 years early, I could get to college, get that $8 an hour job now. And I was so excited. Here I am in Springfield Boulevard Bayside, show up at high school and tell my guidance counselor, Mr. Barkin, like, hey, I got a plan. Cause like, why are you you got picked up again by the truant police? I was like, don't worry about that. And I was like, I haven't figured out. I'm gonna drop out of high school and I'm gonna get that job. I'm gonna make $8 an hour. And he was a sweetheart, by the way. And he's like, oh, son, like, you're never gonna be able to outrun the shame of being a high school dropout. Like, it sounds good as a little kid. It's a bad plan. Everybody, as you might imagine, thought that was crazy, you know. And for me, I was like, but I don't understand. My mother's dying in the new room next door. We're living on government cheese. Nobody gives a shit. And I know how the story ends, but there's a way out of here faster than the conventional wisdom. And that's what my first burn the boats move. And we should, you know, start here. Here's why I always start here when I talk. Yeah. So the burn the boats is about self-sabotage of retreat. It's about eliminating the metaphorical boats that summon you to retreat, whatever that is in your mind. In my mind, it was conventional wisdom was telling me that this one move was going to brand me a loser forever, right? And yet, instinctively, I knew how the story ends. I knew my mother dies in that room next door. I knew that I fucking hated the world. And I don't know how that's going to end. You become self-destructive and angry as a kid. You know, I knew what would go this path. I glimpsed a better future for myself, but all the conventional wisdom was arrayed against me. And that was my burn the boats move. I realized I need to sabotage retreat from this plan to drop out of high school. And the only way to do that is to fail every single class. And so I deliberately failed. I was in, lived in a land of misfit toys with the kids with the beepers in the back of the room, selling drugs, doing all this stuff. Like I was, I needed to be a write-off. So the system would leave me alone, stop picking me up at McDonald's and just be like, this kid's a mess. And what happened is the system begins to align behind their statistics. We got to get him out of Cardoza High School. He's messing up our statistics. He's another dropout. And the system started writing me off. And that was my burn the boats move. Now, the day I drop out of high school, I talk about this in the book, everybody. And it's a true story. I'm ruining the book a bit, but whatever. I go back to my science teacher and I walk in with my book, and there was an academic wall of shame. I don't know why I did this. I could have just, you know, never given the books back, but I went to give my textbooks back. And I go to hand my book to Mr. Rosenthal, stares at the room without missing a beat. He's like, Higgins, what a waste. I'll see you at McDonald's. And the last thing I say in Cardoza High School, before I walk out, I'm so embarrassed and ashamed. And I tell him, you know what? If you see me at McDonald's, it's because I own it. True story. But I was a little punk too. You know what I mean? Like he was right, right? Like, what are you doing? So this is my way of we're trying to redeem some self-respect. But the true story is, back to changing your password in your bank account, I sat on the steps, heart racing. You know how you can hear the blood in your ear? And I was like, the blood is like, shh. Nobody's out there. It's one thing to cut school and hang out with your kids and smoke butts, you know, packing Marlboros. It's another thing to be allowed to do it. That was one of the first things I was like, I have the freedom. I saw it. No one's here and no security guards making me go in because I have a little letter that says I'm a recent high school dropout. I can smoke all the cigarettes I want on the steps of Cardoza. I don't want to smoke cigarettes on the steps. I want to go back in, but it's too late. I burned the boats. And I remember picking myself up from those steps, be like, oh man, this is a messed up life. You know, whatever. A week later, I was like, all right, I'm doing it. I took my GED on standby at Springfield Gardens High School. I took my SAT. I was able to do it on standby. I go ahead. I apply to Queens College. I get admitted to Queens College. Fast forward a year later, I go back to my prom, finishing my first year of high school. And that look of pity and a bit of contempt had transformed to begrudging admiration. The same people that had judged me on the way out, rightfully so, were now like, I was one of them, you know? And so my whole book is about that moment, because that single moment of having the courage to burn the boats to go against conventional wisdom is the reason I was on Shark Tank. It's the reason why I ran two NFL teams. It's the reason I now teach at Harvard Business School. I have been constantly replicating this decision fact pattern where I put myself in a position and instinctively I think I'm capable of, but maybe I quite don't have all the answers figured out and my credentials don't match up what I believe I'm capable of. And I sabotage retreat so that I can go 110% in. We can go into it in this conversation as to what are the layers of that. But what I found in working on my book is throughout history, this simple formula is the one formula that every society turns to when their back is against the wall. And it's what science and psychology counterintuitively tells you is what you need to do to achieve 110%. So my book is a little bit the anti-Atomic Habits. My book is about what does it take to achieve things for which there is no template. Why don't I pause there?
That's awesome. Why don't we take that concept and actually apply it to business? Because most people in here are in business, or they're thinking about business, or they've been in business for a while. Like, tell us about your burn the boats moment when it came to business, and where does that line up in your story?
Yeah, it I think where it really lines up, and I talk about this too, about, you know, anxiety and doubt. The one thing I have seen that has been absolutely true in business is that the people that are ultimately successful are the ones who first begin with an like undying commitment to the goal, not the tactic. Mm-hmm. Where people make mistakes is they think that the way to be successful is in business is to just persist. Trying harder does not mean try same. It means try different, right? And so where it shows up in business is absolute commitment to the overall goal. What are we really trying to do here with this business, right? And where people make mistakes is most people start a business because they want freedom. Financial freedom. They don't want a boss to tell them what to do. They want to leave something better for their kids. Where people make a mistake is they burn the boats for tactics. They think that this particular expression of a business, this particular type of cleaning business, that this is the thing you're doing without realizing, wait, my goal is just to be able to take care of my family. And so what I find is the most successful entrepreneurs are those who burn the boats for goals, and they have very clear intentions as to what they're trying to achieve, number one. And then two, when things inevitably go to hell, which they're doing for me every single day in one of my businesses, right? I realize, wait, I already committed. I committed to the idea that I'm going to be fundamentally successful at the overall thing I'm trying to do, but I'm rigid in my vision and flexible in my execution. And the second part is where most people go wrong in business. They're rigid in their vision, but they're rigid in their execution. Jeff Bezos talks about this all the time. And therefore what ends up happening is people get stubborn about trying to do the same thing over and over again, thinking that I'm just going to outwork it. And the reality is when the market is speaking to you and telling you that you don't have product market fit, there aren't enough customers, your pricing is wrong, whatever it is, your sales guy sucks. When you're a blindly persistent, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy of failure. When you are committed to the goal, but you are flexible in your execution, you will make the inevitable pivots you need to make along the way. I have not a single business in this place. I have tons of businesses, right? 5 years later, they barely resemble the first PowerPoint. But the ones that survived are the ones who made those course corrections all along the way. So what am I looking for when I'm backing a founder? I'm looking for a propensity to identify the moments when they need to course correct and to have the humility and the confidence to implement it. Humility and confidence, you think those are kind of opposite, but they're actually completely synergistic, right? You need the humility to acknowledge that you might be wrong. You need the confidence to try to identify where you might be wrong. And you need to have the courage and confidence to tell the world, hey, I got it wrong. I'm changing direction. And I, at any moment in any day, I can give you like three examples. I won't, because now I'm outing CEOs or falling short. I'm constantly dealing with this fact pattern where everyone else knows that we're doomed. And we all kind of have a sense of what we need to do, but it's really hard. Some of it might involve cannibalization of our own idea. And you have a person at the top who's like refusing to make that course correction. And so I want to be very clear. You burn the boats for goals, not tactics.
Yeah. So let's keep macro instead of going micro on goals. And when you have an entrepreneur, actually not the entrepreneur, let's actually speak through you, Matt. Like, will you talk about your different seasons of goals from the moment where you're just like, I just want to be able to make $8 an hour to getting to a place where you have created financial freedom. You created the freedom that you want in your life, and like kind of walk people through those journeys and understanding that people are exactly where you said they were, is that they started their own business because they want freedom. Right. And like walk through the journey of like being clear on that. And also knowing that once they achieve those things, like there's another layer that they can see right now behind that.
All right, I'm going to go free associating, weapons free, as they say. I'm just going to just download really quick before I forget different thoughts. But like, I think number one, it's for me, I have come to realize that the joy of living is in the striving, and that like, I've been to the top of the mountaintop. There isn't a lot to see. It's like, I enjoyed the process of climbing up. Mm-hmm. So something to realize for everybody here, you know, ultimately you will become addicted to the act of creation and leveling up, and that's okay. As long as you're not running from something and not realizing that the boogeyman has been exterminated, right? Like for me, I still struggle with a fight or flight, amygdala flashing, like mom's going to get evicted, you know, response. I still struggle with that. So why that matters is, as you're striving for independence and freedom, you need to define what it looks like so that you can put an end to the act of running from something. We're all running from something. Ideally, we're running towards something, but the truth is most are running from something. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go back there. I don't want to live this way again. For me, it was inability to save my mother, right? It was vulnerability that we're going to end up in housing court, and I don't want that to happen to my kids. And so the first stage is to really define what some version of victory looks like. Not ultimate, because there is none, right? But some version of victory. And so for me, and I'll tell you my definition, you know, we use the word fuck you money, right? And I think that there, like, fuck you money is an illusion, because the truth is we're not dreaming of drinking pina coladas in the Cayman Islands. Like, that's not anybody's real aspiration, but we're told that that's what fuck you money is. You know what fuck you money is? It's 3 years of liquidity. And here's why I've meditated on this a lot. It's because 3 years of cash flow is enough to say fuck you to anything you don't like about your life and reinvent yourself. It's enough to start a business and stabilize it. It takes about 3 years, right? It's enough to get a master's degree and change your education. The average person can learn a language fluently in 12 months if they focus on it. 3 years is enough to do 10,000 hours of habits. And so for me, I got obsessed with like, well, I don't want the goal to be fuck you money, because it's like so far away. And then it's going to make me rationalize making all these compromises with my kids. And you know what I mean? So the goal became 3 years of liquidity. And anyone in this room could achieve that, provided you don't move the goalpost on you and say, well, I mean, 3 years involves me having a Bugatti and like, you know, a nice Rolex and all that. So number one goal for me was, let me set my intention and try to really stick to it. And it became 3 years. Number two, it was, let me do it my way. If I were to die and my epitaph said, herein lies a dad who compromised everything to invent great products, but he never saw his kids, that would be so crushing to me. And I realized I need to construct a life that gets me where I want to get to while ensuring I'm very intentional about the boundaries that matter to me. So the boundary that mattered most to me was like, I needed to take care of those little babies. And I needed to my epitaph to say, herein lies a dad who gave it the best he could, like left it on his field. So second point to everybody on this call, you don't need to compromise everything. You can draw boundaries on what matters most, but you will need to compromise something. Choose the things you're going to compromise that you don't care that much about. So for me, I constructed a world where I worked all the time, but I made sure I put the children first the best I can. I don't have many friends and I don't go out at all, but I married my best friend. My best friend, I made her my partner in every single business and in every single context so I could hang out with her. So I now have a very self-sufficient universe, right? I set my intentions, I drew boundaries. Whereas you're going to hear messages on Instagram, especially Kevin O'Leary, who I love, does is like, you're going to have to compromise everything. And you're going to have to, I'm like, I don't think that's true. I think there's a third way. You could take it out of yourself, right? I'll probably leave this earth 10 years earlier because I fucking killed myself. Like, I'm okay with that because the kids remember that I was there and then I got my fuck you money in 3 years, you know? And then here's the important part. Once you achieve the baseline level of your success and you define it, now you're going to want more and you want to keep striving, and that's okay. But something sets in, which is risk aversion. Mm-hmm. The challenge is the more things you have, the more things you're afraid to lose. And I noticed this started happening to me when I had stature and reputation. Like, think about it. I'm on the faculty of Harvard Business School. Like, that is a crazy credential for a kid who had a GED, right? And so that becomes now something I'm afraid to lose. Yeah. I now have a lot of money. I have the FU money in the bank account. I'm afraid to lose that. I have my companies. I'm afraid to lose those. Those become prisons of our own making. And so what you have to do when you achieve a certain level of success to ensure that you're not becoming risk adverse, you have to meditate and define your needs as narrowly as possible. As you get bigger, define your needs as small as possible and never let go, because we all move the goalposts on myself. So this is true. I constantly am doing that to myself. I'm like, okay, if I was to get annihilated tomorrow and canceled, whatever, what do I really need? I'm like, all right, I need the respect of my children. I need their 529 funded, because God forbid I leave this earth and I can't pay for their education. It would kill me. I need my best friend, my wife, and I need a roof over my head. Otherwise, you could deposit me in any third world country and I'll take my lemonade stand and I'll start a CPG lemonade business. Like, I'll figure it out again. So that was a lot to download, as I know everyone's on this journey. So if I was to distill it, summarize it, it'd be like, make sure you define what a degree of winning looks like, because otherwise you'll just be scrambling, and you're never going to cut yourself any slack and you're going to be an anxious mess forever. And then once you achieve that, it's okay that you're going to want more, but just make sure you define your needs as narrowly as possible so that you're not afraid to take risk.
That was awesome. I think
somebody just asked me, by the way, Mr. Higgins, Amaryllis, do you believe we fear losing everything as we get older? I believe we do get more afraid as we get older. And I actually think the thing that makes us afraid should be the thing that powers us. Like, when you look at kids, I see this happen all the time. It's kind of sad. I see people with an unmet ambition and they subconsciously blame their kids. And I'm like, God, I really wanted to do this. But like, you know, for my children, I decided to have a mediocre life and compromise all my dreams. Now I blame them for it. And they never even asked me to do it. And when in reality, I look at my kids as like, I would die. I would bleed out. Right? I would like give up my organs to make my kids successful. I use that to power me to take risk, right? Like, it makes me much clearer when somebody tries to compromise my time and get in the way of what I'm trying to achieve for my children. That's what enables me to fight. So I think people do become more risk adverse, but I think it's because they're using that to rationalize why they're not going all in on their ambition. I think a lot of times it's just bullshit.
Wow.
Keep going. You know, sorry.
Yeah. I want to let that sit for a minute, because just so you know, I don't know if you were paying attention to the chat while you were going, but your last two segments were absolutely insane. I think you actually just gave a lot of people a lot of paradigm shifts. But thank one thing that I do want to hit on is that, you know, when you're young, this resonated with me a lot. Just, you know, you and I effectively, weirdly, have the exact same upbringing. I have a single mom who raised four boys, and we were all absolute freaking delinquents, me being the biggest one. It's something that you said is so interesting. When you're younger, right, you're not afraid to effectively burn the boats as much as you are when you're older. And I don't think, you know, and I was going to ask you this question. I was going to ask, does it become easier to burn the boats later? And I would argue that it probably isn't, because the things that you're giving up probably mean more to you. As you become wiser, as you become older, you have a family, you have loved ones, you have things that are on the line. When you're 20, there's not much really that's on the line. You still got 80 years of life left, or 60, 70 years of life left. You've still got relationships that can be made. But when you've got a wife and beautiful children, you've got a lot to lose. So burning the boats can have a lot of ramifications. So to Amaryllis's question, I'd imagine yes. The answer is yes. And I'm speaking as a relatively young person, but I would say that's not necessarily the worst thing ever. It just means that you do become more afraid because there's more on the line. It also, to me, means that you've accomplished greater things from when you were younger.
Agree with that. So let's break that down a bit. And somebody asked me to re-say a quote from her. I'll say it really quick. You need to work on defining your needs as narrowly as possible. Always need to meditate on that. But back to the point about when you get older, here's the challenge. I think that is generally true. It could be a byproduct of the fact that you have achieved great things. And so therefore, and by the way, if you're content and satisfied, game over. We don't even need to have the chat anymore, right? Like, you don't need to burn the boats. I would argue that the joy of living is in the striving. I do believe that. And studies show there's a reason why people who get gold medals in the Olympics suffer from depression a week later, because they're like, oh shit, it turned out I like the training, you know, so whatever. But let's presume that you're perfectly well-adjusted and you don't need to achieve anything more as you get older. For the rest of us who probably will, well, here's the problem. And I see this happening now. It's so crazy. You know, compounding is the most glorious invention ever created. No one created it. It's just a rule of the universe. But I had the joy of spending time with Warren Buffett for a day. It was incredible. And we were talking about compounding. My journey, why I have this Forrest Gump-like resume, is because by dropping out of high school when I was 16, I pulled forward my entire life by 2 years on a percentage basis. Like, that's pretty crazy, right? You know, at that age. And I got the benefit of compounding throughout the course of my life. The challenge is when you're 50 and I'm 48 now, right? Like, your amount of time you have for your decisions to compound is now compressed. You don't have the benefit of time anymore compounding. No. You just don't, professionally and otherwise. So why burn the boats is so important when you're younger is because you have more time for you to reap the exponential returns of your risk-taking. And then later, unfortunately, two bad things happen to you as you get older. Is one, you have a lower propensity to take risk because of what we just talked about. But two, your risks have to be more impactful because you have less time for the benefits to compound. And so it makes you have to be so damn intentional. Now let's talk about patterns. This is where patterns come in. So how do you make better decisions as you get older? You have to make sure that you've benefited from your pattern recognition and from making course corrections. And I find now, as my cohort all gets older, all my people around me, I find everyone now dealing with the fact that bad patterns compound too. As much as good things compound, bad things obviously are compounding. And a lot of when I look at people unhappy with their life and their decisions is because they never interrupted the patterns that were governing them, and the patterns compounded. And now the weight of the patterns is so heavy that it's hard to make those course corrections. So that's just a long dissertation, and I wanted to download what I'm seeing.
Yeah. I think you made a good point there about the idea of, like, when life is shitty, it's easy to, like, say, I'm going to get my shitty life to go to a good life. And when life gets good, it's more difficult to say, I'm going to burn the boats on a good life to have a great life. And then I think the level that I want to hear from your point of view is, like, when you have a great life, how do you say, okay, I'm going to burn the boats to have an extraordinary life?